What is the meaning of life? It's a question that we might ask ourselves at some point, and it's perhaps too big for any one of us to answer. But perhaps the question we should be asking ourselves is, what is the meaning of your life, of my life? And that search for meaning can sometimes get quite existential. My first existential crisis began when I was 13. It was the year of my first breakup. I was getting bullied more in school, and my grandpa was diagnosed with lung cancer and my grandma with Alzheimer's at the same time. I didn't quite know what to make of it all, but I found solace in my favorite stories, even when I wasn't a fan of my own, and I knew I wasn't alone. And that gave me the strength to keep going. And so today, we'll discover how everything from Star Wars to Viktor Frankl to externalizing conversations can show us how stories guide us in our search for meaning in life. Welcome to the Live a Meaningful Story podcast, where we learn how to navigate life one film at a time. We are four friends with backgrounds in storytelling, filmmaking, teaching, and narrative therapy. Join us on our quest towards telling and living our stories more meaningfully. I'm Derek Hatch.
My name is Nick Natal.
Hello, hello, everybody. I'm Joseph Wilson.
I'm Jason Lin.
All right. How's everybody doing?
Doing good. Doing good.
We're here.
Yeah.
We're here.
We're here. We're doing it. Yeah. So last week, we talked about this idea of an origin story, right? Mm-hmm. And how do we craft and communicate that origin story? And we looked at the first Star Wars film, A New Hope, as a kind of a guide for how to understand our origin stories. And Joseph Campbell's hero's journey is a big part, a big inspiration in how we tell origin stories today. But the interesting thing about every origin story is that they all contain some sort of key theme that connects with the human experience. And that's one of the biggest things when I tell people to tell their stories is, what is that core thematic idea that resonates with what it means to be human? And so I believe that every single one of us has that theme, that not just in our life stories, but that we actually gravitate to in other stories, in the films that we really, really connect with.
What do you feel like your theme is?
Well, that's a good question. I think for mine, it's the search for meaning. Because we're going to go through each of your origin stories in the coming weeks.
Whoa.
Okay. And I believe I've texted you guys about this. Joe, we haven't had this conversation as much, but like, I believe that each of you have like a core kind of thematic identity that comes out in the movies that you love. So in my household, we have what are called Derek films. Mm. We'll watch it. She'll be like, yep, it's a Derek film. And we'll all know what she means by that. Yeah. So let me tell you what a Derek film is in our house, okay? A Derek film is a film that's about searching for meaning through the human experience with a touch of the fantastical or the science fiction added in. I asked my wife, these are the movies that are deemed Derek movies.
Okay.
Blade Runner 2049, Pinocchio, Across the Spider-Verse, The Tale of Princess Kaguya, The Truman Show, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, It's a Wonderful Life, It's Such a Beautiful Day, Soul, and as we'll talk about today, Return of the Jedi. That's Joe, yep.
Soul is about Joe.
Yeah.
His name is Joe too, right?
Yeah, and it is, and he has a cat.
Couldn't be better.
But yeah, those are what my wife calls Derek movies.
That makes sense.
You guys see that?
When you
see the ones
together,
you've seen of those?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, now I'll be able to pick. We'll all be able to pick out Derek.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we'll do the same also with Nick, with Joe, with Jason. We'll have your. Because I mean,
Derek
I definitely,
knows mine more than me. I don't have a story, but Derek thinks
no,
I do.
No, you do have a story, and we're going to get into
crazy
it.
Crazy people. I mean, these are crazy people in it.
Yeah.
Mixed trying to figure things out. Those are our stories.
It's true for everyone.
Dead Man, Inside Llewyn Davis.
Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get
these movies for the podcast. And they're also my movies.
Yeah. you like those movies.
Yeah. Same with me. And particularly Return of the Jedi is a Derek movie. Empire is as well, but Return of the Jedi even more so. I talk about this a lot, this idea of a meaning crisis that exists now, where people don't know, what does it all mean? What does my life mean, right? And in a study that was done by Johns Hopkins University, it said that 78% of college students said that the search for meaning and purpose was the primary goal in their life. 78%. And yet, if you look at all these studies that come out of Europe and the US, a lot of people say that they are struggling to find meaning, especially in a post-COVID world. And that fascinates me because that's a huge part of my story. So I relate to that meaning crisis. And in narrative therapy, it's built on something called post-structuralism. Have you guys ever heard of that before?
Mm-mm. No.
Basically, it's a way of seeing things that is about exploring the relationship between meaning and stories. So the meanings that we give to our experiences, we organize them into narratives. And those narratives shape our lives and our perception of reality. And so it's like, to use the example from Return of the Jedi. So there's that scene where they're captured by the Ewoks, and the Ewoks, they can't understand each other, right? And so C-3PO is the only one that has some sort of connection with them, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
And he, in their language, is able to tell them their story. And it's by him telling their story that the Ewoks actually connect with them. That's how they look at them and go, oh, these are the good guys, right? And so it's through that act of telling your story that we ascribe meaning to life. And so not only is it cathartic to have the Ewoks hearing this story for the first time, but we who have just watch the story unfold over the course of 2.5 films, we too are getting caught up in it, because what George Lucas is about to do in that moment, he's going to turn the gem, so to speak, and reveal the true meaning of Star Wars. Because when you get to Empire, Empire is actually a shift from like this very traditional hero's journey of going on an adventure, rescuing the princess, saving the world, to this really deep emotional story that is revealed in what is probably one of the greatest twists in cinema.
Yeah.
No, I am your father. When Darth Vader says that to Luke, right? Yeah. And that is when the gem really turns and you actually start to see, oh, this is really the story Lucas is telling here. And in Return of the Jedi, he's going to bring everything full circle, but he pauses to have C-3PO tell the story almost to the audience. This is what you know, and now I'm going to tell you what it all means. So the first film, Luke wants to save the galaxy, right?
Yeah, just go to it's the this hostage big station, picture pick up some power converters.
Yeah. The second film, Luke wants to save his friend. But then in the third film, Luke wants to save his father, who's also his enemy. And so the journey to get there, Empire Strikes Back is all about turning everything upside down. It's about turning Star Wars upside down, but yet maintaining, Nick, the core identity of Star Wars. And not, like, that's the funny thing is, like, Empire does not change Luke's character, but what it does instead is it reveals all his strengths as flaws. So they're actually inverses of each other. So for example, Luke is very determined, right? He's able to go into a situation and make things happen. And in A New Hope, that's a strength. In Empire, it's a weakness. Because Yoda is warning him of that you are walking into a trap, and he doesn't care. It's him going in to confront Darth Vader, and he has not dealt with himself yet. He has not done that inner healing, right, in his own life. And because of that, he loses the duel with Darth Vader. So his strength actually becomes a flaw, a weakness there. Same character, but now everything has turned upside down. That when things are upside down, then you start to see, how is Lucas going to take the upside down and turn it right side up again? And that's what Return of the Jedi does. Is Return of the Jedi starts the same way as A New Hope. The same shot of the spaceships, same entrance of droids on a desert planet, right? But now everything's turned upside down. Because Luke's first appearance in Return of the Jedi, he's dressed in all black, cloaked, silhouette, just like Darth Vader's introduction in A New Hope. And you're like, oh, so we're right side up, but the upside down is still there with us. And now there's this, like, we're familiar, but we're not. And I like how Return of the Jedi pulls the two strands of storytelling and puts them together. And a lot of people, like, really, really harp on Return of the Jedi as the worst of the three films, but I think the more I've looked at it and the more I've understood it in light of my own story, the more I'm like just amazed at how well it brings everything together. So any thoughts on that so far?
So on The Last Jedi.
Oh, yeah, here we go. I knew this was coming.
No, well, you instigated it.
I did.
We, in the last episode, talked about how we could have multiple calls to adventure.
Yes, right? Yes.
In The Last Jedi, is Luke on a new call to adventure?
That's a good question.
That he starts to refuse. Mm. And it's not exactly his character or who he thinks he is or we've idealized him as, but it's a new call to adventure in a different stage of his life.
Yeah.
So it's that balance of holding tradition and subversion at the same time.
Yeah.
That there is no right or wrong, or this is who this person is or isn't.
Yeah.
Things just are.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the idea of multiple calls to adventure and just how adventurous life is in general is what's striking me right now.
Yeah.
In the latest episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just what I wanted to say.
But that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. I can back that.
Say more.
More.
I just, it's
so
hard.
You can accept that about Luke's character.
I can accept that that's what Rian Johnson is doing.
Well, I guess in defense, you know, we don't live lives that are linear in it. How old is Luke in The Last Jedi?
60, 50?
60, 50.
Yeah, around that. Yeah, he's an old man.
But then compare that 60, 50-year-old man to who we see in The Last Jedi. Of course they're going to be different. We don't live lives as linear. Sometimes we get, you know, jaded or cold or grumpy. So to say that he's completely different, well, yeah.
Yeah.
60-year-old Derek's going to be completely different based on the adventures and the calls that you're going to face between now and then.
Yeah.
Hopefully you're not going to be, sucking alien on a deserted island.
Last Jedi is a great example of what I don't want for my life. If I could put that, like, up in on a billboard, like, this is what I don't want for my story, it's Last Jedi.
It's not even what you don't want, what you don't want to do. It's a cautionary tale.
That's a good way to put it.
You want to help the next generation and not just say, oh, because of my mistakes, I'm not going to help you.
Yeah, it is my nightmare.
Yeah, don't try to kill your apprentice.
I think what you're saying is you don't want to become jaded.
Yes,
like Luke
has
correct. In the latest episode.
Correct.
Because his call to adventure is to help the next generation, and he refuses at first.
Yeah.
Yes.
Until he is led into the belly of the beast.
That's what I'm referring to.
Yeah.
Yes. Even the story to begin with.
It's the salt. This is salt.
So what I really thought was cool, and it really connected the first two movies, and it really drew on something that was touched on in the first one, is Luke wants to be out there, not here.
Mm-hmm.
So on Tatooine, he doesn't want to be where he is. He wants adventure. He wants a call. He wants to go out, and he wants to go to his destiny now.
Yeah.
Right.
He wants
to
get there now.
Yeah.
He's on.
Which I relate to. I relate to that impatience a lot.
Really?
Yes.
I know that. Now I know that.
Especially in my 20s with my whole path of a career of like, in college, you know, because I wanted to be a pastor, and it was always like, I'm ready. And I'd be told like, you're not ready. And I would be like Luke, and I would put myself in situations where I thought I was ready.
You weren't ready.
And some things I did okay in, and some things I didn't, you know?
Get your hand cut off.
Yeah, I got my hand cut off sometimes. Yeah. So I relate to that.
That's cool. I'm glad to know that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he, and Yoda's telling him like, the strength is in control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not necessarily in controlling other things. It's in controlling yourself.
Yes. Yes.
So his friends are in a dangerous situation and he feels that if he's there now, he can help them now.
Yeah.
And Yoda is telling him, you are not ready. What we find out is not that he was not physically ready. He wasn't mentally ready or emotionally ready to bear the burden of Darth Vader being his father.
Yeah.
And that's why they didn't tell him immediately. More lies from the Jedi.
Mm-hmm. More lies from the Jedi.
Which I thought was funny. But Luke wants to control everything out there in his life. He wants to control all these other things, but he's not ready to control himself. And he's not at peace. And he just is chomping at the bit to get anywhere, but just sitting in who he is and his identity and working on that and controlling himself and his own life.
Well, and this is where the search for meaning comes in, right? Is because I think we do focus a lot on what's outside of us and going after that. And that becomes the meaning. But as we mature and as we grow, we start to turn inward more and more.
Yeah.
And we start to realize like there are things that need to be dealt with us as a person, right? And the stories that we have about ourselves, like that's all a part of the search for meaning, right? And so there is a meaning that by the time you get to Return of the Jedi, Luke's whole aim of his story is not really focused so much on, is the rebellion going to overthrow the, right?
Yeah.
It's changed. It's focused on, what am I going to do? Like, am I going to be able to be a Jedi that's strong enough to save my friends and then save my father?
Yeah.
Because Luke could potentially become like his father. And there's hints that that's happening, right? So, you know, there's the comment Obi-Wan makes that he's more machine now than man. So we're already in the question of what it means to be human. And Luke has lost a piece of his humanity. But what's he going to do with that?
Yeah.
Is he going to be able to still lean into his humanity, or is he going to forfeit it? Like his father, like Darth Vader has, and become more machine than man, right?
In the beginning, he's cold. Like the way he talks to Jabba, he's like, you're going to die.
Yeah. And, like, whoa. And that's the thing,
he's
is
menacing.
You kind of see that Luke is like, he's, you start off in Return of the Jedi and it, in one sense, he's on top. He looks like he has it all together, but actually you're like, oh, he's moving closer to the dark side.
I would even
and
say
I relate
that
to that so hard.
I would even say that he's closer to like how Anakin is in
Revenge of the Sith. Yes.
He has very aggression. Similar qualities. Yeah.
There's a lot of parallels between those two films.
I used to think that when they said, oh, there's the dark side in you, I'm like, no, I don't really see it. I think they're just trying to push that and it's not there, but it's very subtle because he's very in his emotions. He's just like not, doesn't have a self peace kind of vibe. He has a lot of passion and a lot of ambition, and that's usually what leads to the dark side.
Yeah.
Right.
And I thought that was interesting. And then belief was a really cool thing too.
Yeah.
And that's what helped him. I would say to really believe that his father could be turned back.
Yeah.
And that there was faith in his father, that there was good with him, because he's telling Yoda, you know, I can't move this ship. You're asking the impossible.
Yeah.
To move this giant ship that's not going to move. It's sunk. It's gone. It's beyond help. It's done.
Yeah.
And that's kind of Vader in a way.
Right.
It's,
right.
It's below the depths. It's in the dark, in the muck. It's not coming out.
Yeah.
And he's saying, you ask the impossible. And Yoda proves to him that it is possible.
But it's funny because then Yoda and Obi-Wan almost like do that back to him, because Luke is saying in Return of the Jedi, oh, I can save him. And they tell him, you can't. And now Luke is the one that's saying, right? And so the lines are getting really gray now, and things are getting a lot messy. That's what I really like there, is that everybody's trying to tell Luke what the meaning of his story is.
Yeah.
Yoda says, to complete your training, become a Jedi, you must confront Vader.
Yeah.
Vader must be destroyed. And it's funny because we interpret that, and they probably mean that as like, you have to kill him.
Yeah.
But it's Luke sees that as, I have to kill the Vader in him.
Yeah.
Right. And save Anakin. And Obi-Wan and Yoda are like, no, they're the same person. And what that demonstrates to me, there's something in narrative therapy that we use called externalizing problems. So in a lot of forms of therapy, problems are seen as internal, as part of you as a person.
Yeah.
Like, you are the problem, right? You are an addict. And so therefore it is you. That is your identity, right?
Yeah.
My name is Derek and I am an alcoholic, right?
Yeah.
It is part of your identity. We don't do that in narrative because we believe that problems come in a context and problems engage with us and they have a life of their own. And that if we could see ourselves as separate from the problem, as we can see our humanity, right? As what is it like if our story is apart from that problem, recognizing that the problem is real, but we actually have the ability to take responsibility. If it's you, if you're the problem, you're stuck with yourself, right?
Yeah.
But if you could see the problem for what it is, and that's what Luke is doing here, is he sees that the dark side is an externalized problem.
Yeah.
That the dark side is something that has infected and infiltrated Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah.
And that is why Darth Vader exists. Darth Vader is the problem. It is not a person. It is a villainous identity that Anakin has taken on and believes that that is truly who he is. But Luke, like a good narrative practitioner, is saying, no, it's not. And Obi-Wan and Yoda are set in the traditional way, mm-hmm. right, of how to see things. Mm-hmm. And Luke is the one coming out and saying, no, there is a better way. And you see that in the conversation that he has with Darth Vader when he's captured in Return of the Jedi,
yeah.
where he appeals to that true story. And he says, it's still there. It's your true self. You've just forgotten it. And when he says Anakin, when he calls him Anakin, and he says that that name no longer has any what to him?
What does it mean?
Meaning to yeah. him, yeah. yeah. His whole, Darth Vader's whole meaning has changed. Anakin's whole meaning is tied up in Darth Vader, and Luke is saying there's a better meaning for your life, and it is in Anakin Skywalker. And the person is not the problem. The problem is the problem.
And even as bad as the Obi-Wan show is, at the end when the conversation is had between Obi-Wan uh-huh. and Anakin, and he was saying, like, no, Anakin is dead. I am who remains. As
yeah.
like, mm-hmm. I am this instead of...
Yes, yeah, so. Yes. No, that actually is very well done how they did that.
Yeah.
And Obi-Wan says, then my friend is truly dead.
Yeah.
And that's what Luke says. Yeah. He says in that scene, he said, then my father is truly dead.
Yeah.
Because he's really getting at the heart of that.
Agreeing and with the things that you're saying, like this like unacceptable part of who we think we are and this idealized part and like
yeah.
and like holding these two things at the same time, like this is not, it doesn't carry the weight that we give it.
Mm. Yeah.
And it could be there. They can both kind of like coexist together.
Yeah.
Dang, that was good.
So, that's so good.
Yeah.
Kind of. We need Luke or Darth Vader. Like, right. Like, yeah. Even the idea of like this dark side and good side, like even
the lines,
that. Yeah.
It's blurry, right?
Yeah.
Because now Luke takes on parts of the dark side. And emotion, that's the whole thing, is they keep yeah. telling him to let go of his feelings, let go of his yeah. attachment. And we see in Revenge of the Sith what holding on to attachment can do to you, right? Yeah. It can implode, can self-destruct.
But holding but on to Luke, his passion is what mm-hmm. saved his father.
Right. But there's that tragic line where at that end of the scene, Darth Vader says, it's too late for me, son.
Yeah.
Now, it's interesting, though, because we're talking about this idea of externalizing problems, but Emperor Palpatine, well, what do you do with him, right? So Emperor Palpatine...
Throw him down a shaft.
There's nothing redemptive about Palpatine, right? Yeah, you throw him down a shaft. And this is something in stories called elemental evil. So this is where, like, Emperor Palpatine is not meant to be a real person. He's meant to embody an idea, right? He is the embodiment of the dark side. He is like the spider with the cobweb window behind him trying to lure in the prey to catch in his web. So Palpatine is supposed to be an externalization of the dark side. In a person. And this is a storytelling thing. We don't do this with real people, but we do this in stories to have a better sense. Like the Joker's another good example of an externalized elemental evil here. But what he does is he attacks everything Luke finds meaning in.
Yeah.
His whole quest to be a Jedi, his devotion to his friends, and his faith in his father's goodness. It is that dark side that is trying to get in and tear him down, right? And it's interesting because when Luke gets to that moment where he wants to strike the Emperor down, he pulls out his lightsaber and Darth Vader pulls out his lightsaber. Yeah. The first time you watch that, you're like thinking Darth Vader's ready to fight Luke. But then the last time I watched, I'm like, no, Darth Vader is actually stopping Luke from striking down the Emperor.
Yeah.
Oh, see, Darth Vader's humanity is actually starting to return to him. And you see in that final lightsaber duel how it's happening, how just as there's a conflict with Luke, there's a conflict with Darth Vader, and the Emperor is the one trying to egg on this conflict with both of them because he feels it. In both of them.
Mm-hmm. When the lightsabers cross, he mm-hmm. smiles. And
he just starts laughing. He's
like, yes. Yeah. And that moment when at the end of the duel, he cuts off. And so it's that revenge. Like, oh my gosh, like he's gotten his revenge, right? And a hand for a hand, eye for an eye, that kind of thing there. But and then he's in the same position as Anakin in Revenge of the Sith, the Count Dooku, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Emperor Palpatine saying, like, finish him. But Luke doesn't go that route. Mm-hmm. He throws down the lightsaber and refuses to do it. And that's the first time in the film that Luke is called a Jedi.
Mm.
That is what makes him a Jedi. And that's what angers Palpatine.
Die like your father.
Yeah.
So you fool, you trust in your friends or something?
Yeah.
yeah.
Oh, what he said? Your
faith in your friends
is yours. Yeah. your weakness. Yeah. And it's the Emperor's hubris, right? His overconfidence. Like, we'll just build another Death Star and Well, that, right, and that's what gets him.
The Emperor is the director of the seventh movie. We'll just build another Death Star.
It's J.J. Abrams.
It's what? The externalized evil of Palpatine. It almost sounds like he's like Luke's false self. Like this idea.
Like there's a that's interesting.
Luke's fighting against his own like the accusations that we have to fight against.
Yeah,
and then he's trying to beat that. So it's his externalized false self in Palpatine that's.
Yeah, Palpatine's bringing it out. Yeah. You know, he's putting it. Yeah. Oh, that's good. That's cool. Good. And it's fitting that Darth Vader is the one to kill the elemental evil, not Luke. And that's his redemption there. And that's when you realize when you get to that point in the movie that, oh, Return of the Jedi, it's not about Luke.
It's about
Anakin. The return of Anakin Skywalker as a Jedi. That's when you realize that's what the story of Star Wars really is.
Star Wars, you know, I just had an epiphany.
Yeah, go ahead.
That somehow Palpatine has returned is now a great line.
No.
Sit back down.
There's no way you can make that.
If we go on this theory that Palpatine is Luke's false self. And it's externalized accusations and it's externalized. like Luke is now balanced. Hold on. Luke is now balancing his Jedi with this evil inside him.
Uh-huh.
You can't kill it. It's always going to be there. And so later in life, you're somehow this keeps popping up.
Yeah.
Somehow I keep thinking these thoughts. Somehow okay. Palpatine has returned.
Now, don't give Disney sudden, that. Don't give
all of a sudden. That was an awesome line. The what is that last movie called? That might have the
Rise of Skywalker.
That guy might have to bump a star with that.
Oh my god!
A full star.
About it. That's a cool take.
You can keep it. You can keep it at zero. But. Think about that. If you go down that right, it's Luke's false self that somehow this is still coming out. Like he's now balancing these things inside him. It's not this evil out here.
Yeah.
It's not out here.
Yeah.
It's inside.
It's interesting because Palpatine only becomes decreasingly more disfigured and ugly and like as it continues. So
right.
And that makes him a cool elemental villain because it just shows like the end result of going down this path. Like he has all this power, but he is just twisted on the inside and outside. And and then the last movie that I can't even remember the name of, he's just like a little puppet on a crane.
Right. Skywalker. Yeah.
And he's like, but like it's still there. He's still evil.
Yeah.
But, I would say even with, if we were going off of what Nick said too, that type of aspect of things doesn't just affect you too. If it's because like, again, somehow it comes back, it can affect other people too.
Right.
Like how it affects, what's it called? Like, the next generation of heroes
and
things like that.
They have to deal with it too.
Yeah. I guess we can kind of give it half a star.
But it's the support of everyone else that helps us defeat that.
Yeah.
They don't do it alone.
The star is in the conversation, not in the movie.
Yeah.
That movie can stay at zero.
Yeah. Well, everybody in Return of the Jedi has their part, right? There's a space battle. It's actually funny because it's a 1-2-3 climax. So in A New Hope, there's one unified climax taking place.
Yeah.
In Empire, there's two. There's what's going on in Cloud City with Han, Leia, and the bounty hunters, and Luke, Darth Vader. And then there's three in Return of the Jedi, the forest, the space battle. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's essentially like three layers, like what's happening above, what's happening on the ground, on Earth, and what's happening in hell, right? Mm-hmm. Like what's happening at the pit. So all hero's journey kind of stuff. But and then we see that there's a story about Anakin's humanity returning to him because he takes off the mask. We see the windows and he wants to look on his son's eyes. And Luke says that he has to save him like physically. And he's like, you already have, right? So like this whole idea of like a search for meaning, like that's what the meaning of his story became. And it became about something bigger than himself, but not about like the rebellion and all that. It became about a person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about like my search for meaning, and it started when my grandpa was diagnosed with lung cancer. My grandma was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. So there was there that I watched something that was coming from the outside that was destroying my grandpa's body and killing him, right? And then my grandma, who was still alive, but her mind was deteriorating. And so there were these two different deaths I was watching, and I get triggered a lot by memory things. It's very emotional for me because both of my grandmas have passed through Alzheimer's. And so I know that runs in my family, and it terrifies me to the core because I watched them forget their story.
Yeah.
So how do you find meaning in that, right? How do you find meaning when you forget your own story? And that's why, you know, when I got in that car accident, where driving, I got hit. I went up a bank, an oak tree plowed through my windshield, inches from me and my brother's faces. And I was like, how on earth am I still, like, I literally crawled out of the car and I was okay. And I don't know how. And that moment is where, like, meaning became really important to me because I started to realize, like, there has to be meaning. There has to be something.
Yeah.
Because if there's not, then why on earth, like, am I here?
Yeah.
And why are any of us here? It's really asking those deep existential questions. And it was the stories of the Bible, for example, the stories of films, right? Historical figures, like all these different stories is what was helping me to think through my life and what that meaning was going to be. And that search for meaning and the way that it's linked with storytelling, I mean, it's so profound, and it makes me think of this guy. You guys ever heard of Viktor Frankl?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was a Jewish psychiatrist. He's arrested and thrown in concentration camps. He gets moved to several camps during World War II. And he wrote this book, Man's Search for Meaning. I highly recommend it because the first half of the book is his story and how in the concentration camps of Nazi Germany, he's trying to find meaning and how he's trying to help other people find meaning and his wrestling with that. And if anyone, if Viktor Frankl in a concentration camp can find meaning and hope in life, then anything is possible for any of us. And that's what it really inspires me. It's one of my favorite books. And he did that in two ways. This was his search for meaning, and this really resonates with me, is one, he was always looking towards the story that he wanted for his life in the future. So he would imagine himself like talking to groups of people about the human condition and the human experience. And he was like, I'm going to like learn what it means to be human in this situation so that I can one day help people to see that. But then also he had to do that in the present with the moment right now. And so what he actually ended up doing in the camps was he would be someone that people would consolidate in who wanted to commit suicide, who were finding themselves hopeless. And he would find them, he would help them through his therapy to discover, to find their meaning and purpose that they could hold on to in order to bear their suffering. And there's a quote here in Finding That Reason to Live. There's a quote I'll read to you here in the book. And he says, "For the meaning of life differs from man to man, from day to day, from hour to hour. What matters, therefore, is not the meaning of life in general, but rather the specific meaning of a person's life at a given moment." And he talks about that is what we are supposed to do in life, is we are supposed to, in each story and each chapter we find ourselves in, we are to find meaning and purpose within that. Regardless of how much agency or control we have in it. So,
yeah,
I've been talking a lot.
No, it reminds me of how like it's told to talk about your testimonies with people because it connects your story with other people's stories that are, you know, struggling with those type of things or struggled with those type of things. And you can even help in the situation of just like, oh, this is how I was able to overcome this. Or I still haven't overcome this, but we could struggle together. Really.
Yeah.
Like, so it reminds me of testimonies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think what I heard in that quote was it's just right now. The meaning of right now, whatever's happening right now is the meaning of life. Like in this moment.
Yeah.
And that search for a big picture meaning can get such in the way of just this moment. And
yes.
And you're in this trap. That you're in this trap that you just have to learn how to transcend out of.
Yeah.
And that's what happened is I kept trying to think, I'm very future oriented, right? So I'm just kind of like, well, what's the grand meaning of my life? You know, all that kind of stuff. And it wasn't until I started to really live in the present moment, which I had really struggled with for many years.
Yeah.
But that's when I started to live in the present moment and find meaning in that. Then the meaning for my overarching life started to become more and more clear. It unfolded,
Then you're no longer really writing that story.
Yeah.
Because you're living in the moment and it's like written on the back end. Like all of a sudden you can see a story written.
Yeah, you realize what you have written.
Yeah.
You can't control the the story.
Yeah.
You can control the moment and that story.
And you control, and the big thing he emphasizes, you control who you are. Mm-hmm. Like, what is your attitude? What is it like to take responsibility? How do you face it? Right? That is what you can control. And that is the part of the story that you are writing, you know? And that is the part of the story that when we're struggling in a meaning crisis, that we push forward through.
That, wow, that's like, that goes back to the swamp scene on Dagobah.
Uh-huh.
Wow. That's cool. Yeah, no, it's just what have I been given to steward? What have I been entrusted with in this moment?
Yeah.
What can I do with that, with it? Like, that's what's helped me when I'm questioning everything out here.
Yeah.
Like, where am I? What am I supposed to do? I don't know. And it's just like, well, what's right in front of you? How do you deal with that? And that's really helped me. And I've found when I start to get more restless and stuff, and I think you guys know this about me, if you haven't noticed it, I'm a slow eater. I'm a pretty slow eater.
I'm the same.
But yeah. I've started to just breeze through like meals. Just I eat and then I go. And I've been noticing that's a sign usually of me getting more restless or impatient or just kind of being at odds with this idea of like the meaning being out here and trying to grasp at it, or the meaning being right here where I am and I'm okay and I'm content and peace and self-controlled. And it comes out in just either irritability or lack of patience and wanting to just get through things. Because it used to be, you know, most of the time I just sit and enjoy and eat and I'm just there in the moment and I'm cool. I'm all right.
Yeah.
Where am I supposed to go? Like, you know, spend an extra, all right, I get there 10 minutes earlier. I get to this other thing fast. It's just, it's a race and it doesn't help at all.
Yeah.
It's just content and with the control of myself, it's more enjoyable too.
Yeah. Cause I had the issue too.
Yeah.
Like I was so like far future. Let's make that 5-year plan, 10-year plan. Yep. So we know where we're going until coming out here. And like the scripture that really stuck to me was in Matthew, when we had to learn Matthew 6, and it's like, the birds of the air, they neither sow nor reap or gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. No matter what I really do, life is going to happen regardless if I can try to plan it tomorrow. I can try to plan the rest of today, but something could happen where that entire plan is shifted and changed immediately, and now my day is completely different.
Yeah.
So trying to hold on to something that is ever flowing like a river instead of something that is just like a straight path.
Yeah. And since you brought up scripture, that's why Ecclesiastes has always resonated with me, because the opening line that the teacher cries out is meaningless, meaningless. Everything is meaningless. A chasing after the wind. I'm like, I felt that. That's real. Like that's one of the most real statements ever penned, like let alone in the Bible, right? How many of us have ever felt that like all we were doing in life was chasing wind?
Like a paper can't even bag.
Hold on to it. And that's why this podcast is called Live a Meaningful Story, is because that's what we're after, is this relationship between meaning and our stories, and how in the stories that we love we find meaning in them. But it's not just the name of this podcast. It's also the name of my coaching program. So if you want to go on a journey through what it means to live your story more meaningfully, then consider going through that coaching program. It can be done as either a group workshop or one-on-one coaching. And it's an experience of personal development that really combines the world of storytelling with narrative therapy practices so that you can have greater clarity about your story. You can learn the skills to better communicate it and ultimately take steps towards living your own story more meaningfully. And so if you're interested in that, all you have to do is go to allthingsnarrative.com here in the show notes. You can learn more about it, sign up for a free consultation, and I'd love to help you live a meaningful story. And next week, it's Nick's turn, and Nick is going to, we're going to dive into Nick's pick of Stranger Than Paradise and how that connects with his story. So join us for that, and it's going to be an amazing time.
The Nick Pick.
Thank you for listening to the Live a Meaningful Story podcast, produced by All Things Narrative. If you'd like to learn more about our coaching, workshops, events, please check out allthingsnarrative.com. You can also follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at All Things Narrative. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing and leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and tune in next time as we continue exploring the stories we love and the stories we live. Take care.